8-hour day movement at the time. The rest of the world noticed. The International Workers' Day was taken up as a holiday by the socialist movement internationally. So today, fast forward to today, and especially, you know, the last 40 or 50 years, the Russian Revolution enhanced the prestige of May Day and so on, May 1st, International Workers' Day. So to this day, in many countries, International Workers' Day, May 1st, is both a holiday, you get the day off, but also a day for unions and left-wing political parties to show their strength or to protest or go on strike about a certain issue. So that's taken on many different forms in many different countries. And you'd be surprised, some of the countries that you wouldn't think of as being very radical or being very left-wing, like Japan, they actually turn out to have big May 1st celebrations and oftentimes...
El Salvador, too.
Yeah, El Salvador, oftentimes taking on certain issues.
You know what my grandpa used to do that day? He would have a whole basket of red eggs. You know how you dye the eggs like in Easter? And he's like, this is Workers' Day. So at the home, he almost have that, yeah. You know, the red eggs.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
He's like, he learned that from, like, this. I guess during the Maoists used to do that too. The red eggs, you know, during the May Day.
Well, here, as you know, Diego, especially difficult to deal with, is that through the 50s and 60s, when there was both a upswing in the economy here for at least most of the white working class and some people of color, and the McCarthy, you know, anti-communist witch hunt, the Stalinism not really trying for revolution anymore around the world, especially in the advanced capitalist countries, you had basically a situation where things got more conservative politically, and the whole idea...
Blacklist
of the 30s, of the 50s of the McCarthy era. So, whereas in the as recently as the 1930s in the United States, and probably into the 40s, you had big, actually, May 1st celebrations, even though way back in the early 1900s, I think late 1800s, the U.S. government tried to create a separate holiday to draw people away from May Day, which is our current Labor Day in September. It had some legitimacy to it in the sense that some unions supported it, so they were for a while celebrating both, and also celebrating July 4th as a workers' holiday. That has all narrowed down to basically, in this country, Labor Day, and that's practically gone. The unions don't really do anything on Labor Day.
It's a commercial day.
It's a day for them to barbecue and blah, blah, blah. Some people get a day off.
Drunk and...
Right. Some people get a day off, but it's lost its effectiveness as far as you don't have Labor Day parades even anymore for the most part. You don't have any connection to the labor movement. You'll get the corporate media will print some op-ed piece that no one will ever read.
Well, I remember in Houston, they would have the military
about
parade
unions.
On Labor Day.
Oh,
the military
yeah,
parade.
Thank you very much, Houston.
Oh, we're clapping for the military, yeah. You know, instead of us, the workers.
Right,
you know?
Right. So, basically, And May 1st disappeared after the 30s as International Workers' Day for the most part. Now, I remember even as far back as the 80s when I came to Boston, it hadn't died out completely. There were small May 1st celebrations, usually among immigrant workers' communities, like in Jamaica Plain at the time and others, usually led by left-wing groups. They were very small, but it was there. You know, and it was good. I don't know what happened in the 70s. Maybe people kept it alive. The anti-war movement did stuff on May 1st. I really don't know that history very well. And so it never totally died in the United States, but it got very, very small. Then in 2006, there was a big uptick in May 1st activity, again, centered in the immigrant community, centered among Latinos, mostly who had brought traditions of socialism, many of them, to this country. And there was a day without an immigrant because that year... there was a threatening piece of legislation against immigrants that had got people very worried and upset and energized. And a small left-wing immigrant group in L.A. started the ball rolling, and it just took off among immigrant communities to the point where even the corporate media started to pay attention. Wait a minute, May 1st, something's going to happen. You know, and what happened, even in Boston, which was not the epicenter of the whole thing, a lot of people, a lot of immigrants, mostly 99%, immigrants left jobs, took risks, went and protested. And we helped form the Boston May Day Coalition, meaning Socialist Alternative, and that led a protest downtown that was huge, actually. It was pretty big. I forget the numbers, but it was in the hundreds, maybe over 1,000, something like that. But it was big. I use the word huge because it came out of nowhere, out of nothing, basically. You know, there's no official union supporting
it,
that.
It was like that incident in the 80s when the Klan came here and you said, whoosh.
Yeah.
There's just one phone call. Everybody's on the same ball, like 5,000 people. Yeah.
And behind the scenes, like SEIU, Service Employees International Union, had done some agitation around the question of May 1st, but they hadn't organized coherently. After that, for a few years, they did. And there were some big May 1st celebrations. Like, for example, I'll use Boston as an example, both downtown at the Common, but bigger even in East Boston, which is the more of the immigrant community, of the Latino immigrants down there. And then after a while, the one downtown died off, and it was more just in East Boston, and that's where it continues to this day. Now, what is one of the main focuses and targets of the Trump administration is obviously immigrants and attacking immigrants. So therefore, a lot of immigrant rights groups, not all, unfortunately, but a lot of them are talking about May 1st. But also the labor movement is, because obviously Trump is attacking unions. So parts of the labor movement, especially those with immigrant workers in them, are paying attention to May 1st. So let's get into some details. But first, what is our legal ID here? Is WMFO Medford or WMFO in Medford? We also are Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. A little slice of that community base is our show here, Socialist Alternative Radio. Talk and music from a working-class, democratic, socialist perspective. And you are listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, and that's in Medford, Massachusetts, right on the border of Somerville, Massachusetts. We go international through the wonders of the internet. And you can also, if you're driving around Greater Boston, you might catch us. The signal goes in various directions at various times. Go to WMFO.org to listen by computer. And I'm leaving something out. Oh, yeah, we're also known as Tufts Educational Radio. I like that educational radio thing. Here's May Day, May 1st. Now, what's happening this year? And it's not your fault if you don't know about this. This is totally under the radar of the corporate media, or almost totally under the radar of corporate media. We're going to read some excerpts first from May 1st, All Out Against Trump. This is a statement by Shama Sawant, a socialist city councilor in Washington State, in Seattle. No accident that a lot's happening out there around this issue, around having May 1st be a day of strikes and protests against the Trump administration for immigrants' rights, et cetera, for workers' rights. Shama published this in various places. I think it might be in Counterpunch. I think it's definitely in the socialistalternative.org website, published on the 24th, which was what? Yeah, Friday, right? The 24th was Friday?
Yeah.
Okay. May 1st, All Out Against Trump. I'm going to quote here. Momentum grows for May Day strikes and protests. Millions have protested since Trump's inauguration, yet the billionaire-in-chief has relentlessly pursued his racist, sexist, and anti-working class agenda. Now his latest budget and health care proposals declare war on everything from the Environmental Protection Agency to Medicaid to public schools, while handing out major tax cuts to corporations and the wealthiest Americans. Trump can be defeated, but it's a question of social power. Whether or not the administration can carry out its agenda is linked to how broad and militant a movement can be built to oppose it. Many right-wing governments throughout history have been forced to change course or brought down altogether by revolts of ordinary working people. But symbolic protests alone will not be enough. We will need to engage the real power working people have through mass civil disobedience and strike action. If strike action is wide enough, this will affect the profits of the corporate elite, large sections of which have been happy to go along with Trump because of his agenda of deregulation and regressive taxation. This will put real pressure on them to back away from Trump. International Workers' Day, May 1st, also known as May Day or International Workers' Day, is historically a day of global mass action and major immigrant rights protests across the U.S. Now, I'm going to switch gears here. I'm not going to quote. I'm just going to say, as we said earlier, there is stuff happening before May 1st. But please, we're urging people, our listeners, people that are in Socialist Alternative, people that are in other left-wing groups, people that are in unions, to put a lot of focus on May 1st. A lot of focus. Get out of work that day. If your union refuses to do anything, think about maybe leaving work early, finding a protest. There'll be one in Boston, and I don't have the details right now, but we'll talk about it in the future. In Worcester, Massachusetts, there's going to be a protest starting at 4 p.m. at Worcester, in front of Worcester Plaza, in front of Worcester City Hall. We're hoping that unions will be involved in that, as well as Socialist Alternative and other groups that are already interested and doing work on that. But you also have April 4th, the look around your area for Fight for 15 actions, and please support them. April 22nd is Earth Day. There might be March for Science groupings, Earth Day groups in your area. on that day. April 15th is tax day. Watch out for right wingers seizing that day, but I think the left wing should really seize that day. You know, real socialists are against increased taxes on working people. Don't confuse socialism with liberalism. Liberals will go on and on about it's your duty to pay taxes, blah, blah, because a lot of them are upper middle class. That's crap. That's crap. The tax system is broken. It is in favor of the rich now. So much so that anyone that puts forward increased tax on working people is wrong. There's more than enough money among the super rich and the big corporations to raise revenue for whatever we need under capitalism, but it's a political fight to get it. The political default position is not to say raise taxes on working people. And that's even taxes like that are going to hit working people the hardest, even if it's not an income tax on working people. No, wrong. Get the money from the super rich. Get the money from the big corporations. That's where the money's got to come from right now for universal health care, for paternity and maternity leave, for child care centers, heavily subsidized or free for working people, for everyone, basically. All the demands that we need for a $15 minimum wage. The money is there. Never before has the United States been so unequal. Never before have the rich been so rich. The money's there. Never before have the corporations been getting these huge profits. Money is there. They're just holding on to it and telling us it's not there. They're like, think we're fools. They think we're idiots. They're hoarding the money. They're still investing some of it, but it's investments for them. There's no trickle down. All the trickle down
is
piss.
It's like I felt when I was working at Shaw's. Like, you guys have, but you act like, oh, there's not enough hours. Oh, there's not this. I'm sorry. We're going to have to cut back on that.
You know, there's a Shaw's. I think it's a Shaw's.
Well, now it's not Shaw's. Now it's back to Star Market. But there's a few little Shaw's.
I think there's a Shaw's near where I live. It's crowded now because they're doing the market basket thing. They're making it seem like there's a lot of deals. But there aren't. And even Market Basket is
around. I went yesterday to Market Basket. I said, geez, this is like going to Whole Foods.
Yeah, I spent $90 in Market Basket and did not buy all that much yesterday. You know, especially if you want to buy protein, forget about it, you know? It's bad. It's really bad.
I go to two places for the I get all the other basic stuff at, like, let's say, Market Basket, and then I'll go down to McKinnon's for my proteins. Because it's way less.
You know,
because they're just meat. You know, they're cutting and they get it wholesale or whatever, you know, prices.
Well, the thing with the prices in general right now, as I'm sure you know, Diego, and I think a lot of people know this, but I just want to get it out there, they're going up. Everything's going up right now. And it's because the Federal Reserve is about to raise interest rates. Not the only reason, but Federal Reserve is about to raise interest rates three times. They did it once. I'm not sure if the three, including that three, is the one they already did or not. And so this increases, inflation throughout the economy. They're doing it on purpose. It's going to mean you pay more money for any loans you have, whether it's a credit card bill or a car loan or student loan. You're going to get screwed on that badly. But you also see the food going up, gas going up. Again, it's not just a Federal Reserve reason. That's bad enough, but it's other reasons as well. Like, for example, OPEC got together with oil, and this happened months ago. They said, we're gonna just produce less oil and create more of a demand for it, and we're going to jack up the price. Now, in the United States, which recently became, people don't know this, the world's biggest oil producer through all sorts of deregulation, oil going into, and I'm not saying this is a good thing, this is a bad thing, oil being pumped where it shouldn't be pumped, fracking where there shouldn't be any fracking, that sort of thing. They are churning up more oil. And capitalism is not a planned system. So even when OPEC does something, not all the OPEC people go for it or whatever. And the United States doesn't have to go for it. They don't go for it. They're not in OPEC. So in other words,
OPEC is...
Saudi Arabia, basically.
Oh, okay. So we almost went to war with them in the late 60s.
OPEC is the Middle Eastern, mostly Middle Eastern countries, but there's some others.
Saudi Arabia is the main.
I think Indonesia might be in it. I'm not sure. I have to check on that. I think...
That's why Saudi Arabia wasn't on the list, because it's an OPEC country.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that, like, there's still, like Lenin wrote about in his book Imperialism, if you think that just because there's a monopoly that it's somehow good because there's less competition, you're wrong, because monopolies just bring it to a higher level of competition where you have competition between monopolies, like earlier Boeing, Airbus. That doesn't create cheaper airlines. It creates just more competition at a more intense, higher level. And that's the same thing with oil. And, you know, where you have, you know, these rich producing countries with corporations using the states in those countries for the most part, to produce oil, but not in any sort of plan. They're still in competition. So OPEC's in competition with the United States, blah, blah, blah. And that doesn't mean competition also doesn't necessarily mean lower prices, by the way. I'm not falling into that. That's just not true, actually, when you look at it statistically. But it can happen that way. It's not happening that way right now. Right now, gas prices are going up. Oil prices are going up. And that might change based on, I don't know, something that's going to happen in the next month or so with production, but or whatever. But right now, it's going up. They usually raise prices, I think, in the summer. Like both the fuel people to make, you know, because you're not getting as much business, so they say, and the for heating oil, I mean, and also the gas prices. Don't they usually go up in the summer? I think they do.
They
spring, summer.
Yeah, that's why people at certain points.
Because they know they're
summer,
driving more. They say, oh, you're driving
instead
more.
Instead of traveling.
Well, that's not why.
No,
you just jacked up the price.
There were years where people were not doing as much traveling.
Because it was like, really expensive.
Because
right.
It went up. Because it's so, like, I remember during the Bush years.
Yeah. It's not approaching $4 anymore, going over $4 right now, but it's going up. I'm just using that as an example. Everything, yeah. As far as I can see, everything is going up
try
in price.
$5.99 in Texas at one point.
Ooh.
$4.99.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're just adding that to the mix here that, you know, they say employment is high right now. They overstate it. The employment statistics are a mess. Okay, so you
the
get a job now.
Jobs
now, yeah,
that
most
we
of the jobs are low
there.
Paid, right? Most of the jobs are low paid.
Like me, I need two jobs to make one check.
Yep. And then the price is going up. Price is going up. Prices are going up. So anyway, and you know, they always blame that on wages, but statistically, it's been shown time and time again that prices go up first, and wages, if they go up, are trailing prices. They're just trying to catch up, and they don't usually. So even with low levels of inflation in the United States over the last 20 years, relatively low levels, wages have not kept up. You know, even if inflation is relatively low, as they say, 2-3%, it turns out the wages were not that high even. Wages stagnated, flatlined for a lot of people, most people. Back to International Workers' Day. So I'm going to quote again. May 1st, also known as May Day or International Workers' Day, is historically a day of global mass action and major immigrant rights protests in the U.S. This time, the time has never been more relevant to return to May Day's roots and to launch a summer of resistance against this dangerous right wing and Trump's brutal attacks. The strangest right wing. Trump's brutal attacks on immigrants have been front and center in his first 2 months in office, and already they provoked immigrant protests and strikes on February 16th, which were organized rapidly, involved thousands of immigrant workers in cities around the country. The mass protests at the nation's airports, also in response to Trump's anti-immigration ban, dealt the president his first humiliating blow as sections of the ruling class pushed back on him over growing concerns at the resulting chaos of mass civil disobedience. We helped organize some of those protests, by the way. Social Alternative helped organize some of those protests at the airports, and also right after Trump got elected, those big protests that happened the week after the within the week of the election. Now immigrant workers around the country are preparing for what are likely to be the biggest May 1st demonstration since hundreds of thousands walked off the job in 2006 in the Day Without an Immigrant. Now here's this new connection to unions, partially propelled by immigrant workers, but unions also getting attacked. So strike plans in California, quoting again, the most important major development so far in California, where 340,000 service workers are preparing for strike action. Did you hear about this, by the way, Diego?
Which one?
Let me finish it, then I'll ask you. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-hmm. The most important May Day development so far in California, where 340,000 service workers are preparing for strike action, led by a coalition including SEIU, United Service Workers West, and Immigrant Workers Centers. Did you hear about that?
No.
SEIU. Okay, so that's huge. That's like a big SEIU local plus immigrants, plus an SEIU local called United Services Workers West, plus Immigrant Workers Centers. They quote an activist, the president is attacking our community, quote unquote, said Tomas Mejia, M-E-J-I-A, Mejia, a member of USWW's executive board. Immigrants have helped form this country, we've contributed to its beauty, but the president is attacking us as criminal, end quote. A caravan of fear is also being organized by the coalition traveling through the state of California during the month of April to build up for May 1st action. The president of United Teachers Los Angeles, Alex Caputo Pearl, has called on Superintendent Michelle King to shut down schools district-wide on May 1st. In the Bay Area, the San Francisco Labor Council issued a statement on March 7th endorsing worker solidarity actions on May 1st and asking that there be, quote, no retaliation against any worker, union or non-union, who chooses to exercise their civil rights by taking the day off on May 1st. In Washington State, momentum has been growing around May 1st. In Martin Luther King County, which includes Seattle, the County Labor Council voted to urge its affiliate unions, quote, to consider all forms of action on May 1st, 2017, whether striking, walking out, taking sick days, extended lunch hours, exercising rights of conscience, organizing demonstrations or teach-ins, or any other acts of collective expression, end quote. Now, Social Alternative, we're for that. As I explained, or as we talked about in another show, we've been very careful in the past about the term general strike. We don't want it to mean something that's not a real general strike, meaning official labor movement backing that's really going to be a far and wide thing. This year, we're being a little more relaxed with that term because it is getting some currency now, general strike, to mean slightly different. Like, for example, from the Fight for 15 movement, they do these one-day strikes. Mm-hmm. Occupy, there was a strike. They called for general strike, and it actually did bring out some workers in Oakland. But it was supposed to be beyond that, but it didn't really catch on. In, what's the biggest example? 2006, Day Without Immigrants would be the biggest example recently. Last general strike of a city was Oakland in 1946, by the way, in the United States. It was a real big general strike. Leaving out some movement that was using that term general strike. But anyway, it's been being used recently as well. And
what about the 80s with the airport controllers when the Reagan attacked?
There should have been. Also in Wisconsin, they talked about a general strike when Walker attacked. And that's maybe the one I was thinking of in 2011 when the Republican Governor Walker brought in real bad attacks on the public sector workers there, the unionized public sector workers. There was serious talk of a general strike starting among public sector workers but going to all union workers in Wisconsin. They didn't do it, and they lost as a result. They put all their money in getting a Democrat elected. And the sad part of that strategy was the Democrat they put forward had already been in power, and everyone hated him. He was a Democrat, mayor of Milwaukee, and he sucked. He was horrible. I'm not saying it would have been better if they put in a quote-unquote better Democrat. It would have probably been the same result. Their mistake was to rely on the Democratic Party. You know, if you're going to energize people for something different, you got to give them something different. You know, you can't say, oh, you're going to be better off, meet the old boss, same as the new boss. It's not going to work. It doesn't work. It doesn't energize people. You know, look at Sanders. If you want to take that,
I give you something better. No boss.
Way.
We're the we're no boss.
Exactly. You take Sanders a certain way. And again, this is perception more than reality, in my opinion. Sanders is not a socialist anymore. Hasn't been since 1992, about or around that time, even before that a little bit. But so he runs for office. He's not running as a socialist. He's running as a Democrat. He doesn't even use the term, but the corporate media at first probes with that term. You know, here you're a Democratic socialist. He doesn't deny it, to his credit, but he doesn't also promote it. Then he gives a speech about what he thinks it is. It's basically liberalism. He redefines socialism to mean like FDR and, you know, people that are not
kind
socialists.
Like
Johnson. Mm-hmm. He didn't even mention Wallace, but yeah, same deal. And not many people heard that speech, but that, you know, he clearly put his cards on the table with that. He said, nah, he's not a socialist at all. But the perception was Sanders is somehow to the left of the normal Democrat, maybe a socialist. And a lot of people were like, yeah, it sounds good, right? So, but, you know, and he didn't expect to do that well. So he didn't understand. He hit a nerve. If he did understand, he would have been talking about socialism more. And or he didn't talk about hardly at all. And he hit a nerve, right? And people were ready for that sort of thing. And a lot of people. And they responded, you know. And it was offering, in a certain way, at least the perception of something new. And he talked about certain issues that the other candidates didn't. I mean, Sanders came late, for example, to the $15 minimum wage.
Bread and butter issues.
He exactly.
Was the one
that's
that was
I mean.
More bread and butter yep. issues. The other one was just like ding, ding, ding. It was like a ring, you know.
Right.
Okay. You know, who's going to start swinging first?
Right.
You know?
So for a time, the perception was Sanders is offering something to the left, something, like you said, issues that
bread
we care
butter.
About.
Yep.
I would say that, yeah, he was clearly a populist, a left populist, but not a socialist. And he was always planning to keep everything in the Democratic Party. Does that mean that he'll never break with the Democrats? Can't say that. There's a lot of things are going to happen if he survives. A lot of things are going to happen. But it was clear at that time he was going to stay with the Democrats because he'd been with them for so long, since like the early 90s. Even though he was declared an independent, he was still really a Democrat. Getting back to May 1st and Washington State, let's see, I read that thing, right, about the... Well, anyway, this kind of flexibility, you know, not just striking, but protesting, sick days, extended lunch hours, going to protests, This conflict has been stressed by organizers around the country who want to minimize retaliation against workers while building for the broadest, most powerful possible May 1st actions. A number of other unions in Seattle have also passed May Day resolutions, including WFSCE Local 304, representing workers at Seattle Community Colleges, and IBEW Local 46, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Listen up. IBEW Local 46, representing electrical workers. At the University of Washington, the largest university in the Northwest, 6,000 graduate students, workers represented by UAW Local 4121, will soon be voting on whether or not to go on strike on May 1st, following a strike resolution passed by the union's executive board. As a member of the city council, and this is Shama Sawant, a statement here, I have used my platform here in Seattle to call the city's mayor, Ed Murray, to allow all city workers to take May 1st off without retaliation. Washington state law already allows all public employees to take off 2 days each year for reasons of conscience or religion. But the biggest developments in Seattle are with the Seattle Education Association, SEAC, where 5,000 teachers will soon be voting on whether or not to shut down the city's public schools for May 1st. In response to longtime unconstitutional underfunding of schools in Washington state. Quote, we have tried the same thing for years, said SEA Director Kit McCormick. We've been writing our legislators. We've been going to Olympia, that's the capital, and it's time to take a bigger step. We're fed up, said Socialist Alternative and SEA member Justin Vinson. Educators have been fighting to defend our schools, and now we have Trump and Betsy DeVos setting their sights on major education cuts. But there is a larger principle at stake here as well, with the administration going after our immigrant sisters and brothers, women, Muslims, and LGBTQ people. An injury to one is an injury to all, end quote. A lot of socialist alternative material now is talking about an injury to one is an injury to all. Looks like I cut off some of her statement here. Not just about, she says, there's a subhead, it's not just about Trump. And I agree with that, but I don't have the rest of the article in front of me.
Yeah, it's like everyone talks about, Obama. It's not about the individual. It's about the system. It's correct, about what is being implemented.
Yep. Now, there's also calls in some places.
They just put a label in. I said, that's really Mitt Romney was the first one running with that. So but when it's him, it's Obamacare, you know?
Yep. There's also calls in some places for student walkouts in colleges and high schools. There's more strike action that I listed out in Minnesota. There was a resolution we read over the air last time where the Minnesota Nurses Association, which, by the way, has just endorsed Ginger Jensen, which I'll get into, they have put forward a resolution for a May 1st strike day of strike action and to publicize that throughout the labor movement in Minnesota, in Minneapolis in particular. And I hope that gets some traction, as they say. I hate that word, but you know what I mean. And there's a lot of potential here for this to spread. Now, of course, I don't want to get too far ahead of the game. There are a lot of official labor leaders that could be talking about May 1st, and they're not saying a word. So it could turn out it will just be regional pockets of official union strike action on May 1st, which is better than nothing. And a lot of cities having pro-immigrant rights demonstrations and anti-Trump demonstrations. And if you're in a city and you want to help us in Socialist Alternative organize an anti-Trump, pro-immigrant rights, pro-labor demonstration on May 1st, then please get in touch with us. Again, go to socialistalternative.org, and you can find all sorts of addresses and so on and phone numbers. Also, go to Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook and many other sources to get in touch with Socialist Alternative. Now, so May 1st hopefully will be big, and we hope that you'll all, I'd say if it's a protest action in your area, it's probably going to be late afternoon. Try to get that late afternoon off. Or the whole afternoon. If you're in a city lucky enough to have official union strike action, definitely go to that whenever it is. Try to get your union, if you're in one, to do strike action. Try to get your immigrant rights group or other groups, progressive groups, to get behind May 1st demonstrations. In Worcester, a situation I'm familiar with, there is interest among some of the unions and some of the activists within unions for May 1st. Demonstration. There was a very good one a couple years ago. Small compared to other cities, but big for Worcester. That had official union backing. I hope that happens again this year. It didn't quite, it happened a little bit last year, but they didn't mobilize much. This year we want really the rank and file out. We want everybody out on May 1st. And again, we realized to a lot of American workers, you know, that they never heard of May 1st, really, or they heard very little about it. But please understand, a lot of immigrant workers have heard of it. They come from countries where it was a major, major thing. And ironically, it started here in the United States. Yeah. So we're trying to bring back the tradition, but not just in an abstract attack. We gotta go after Trump. You know, we gotta push back on Trump, but also we want to win gains. So in Worcester, for example, there's a big issue now of water in at least two public schools, maybe more, tainted with lead, PCBs, which is a carcinogen, a byproduct of industrial production, and also copper. And this has been a problem going on for a while, but it stayed below the radar. And teachers were getting sick, teachers were getting cancer, students getting sick and so on. And
from drinking the water.
Yeah. And then an official study showed this was the case. Yeah, there's a real problem. And so the teachers union, which is affiliated to, I believe, Mass Teachers Association and the National Education Association, they had a rally, a small rally in Worcester. Social Alternative participated, turned into a pretty good rally. City Council ignored the whole issue. They don't want to shut down the schools immediately, which has to happen, really. May 1st is going to be a day to protest against that as well in Worcester. We're going to link that to the anti-Trump
issues. That's the issue in Worcester.
That
schools.
Plus the anti-Trump. Yep. Yeah. And so this is every around the world, people use that day to take the local issues, tie them into the national issues if they do it right. This does happen a lot. And protest.
That's why Cambridge should have an issue of gentrification.
Absolutely.
And the old, you know, all of a sudden, a lot of the people that grew up in Cambridge are no longer there because they've been forced out.
Yep, absolutely. Mentioned this earlier, mentioned it again, and I got a couple other things about Worcester. Oh, there's where my May Day stuff went to. I created a separate thing for that. That was a mistake. Maybe we'll come back and mention May Day in a second. But I mentioned earlier that the Minnesota Nurses Association has supported a Socialist Alternative member named Ginger Jensen, who's running as an open member of Socialist Alternative for city council in Minneapolis, biggest city in Minnesota. So here we go. Article by Katie Quarles, who is a nurse in the Minnesota Nurses Association. I believe she's on the executive board. Katie writes this article for socialistalternative.org, March 24th, Friday again. Minnesota Nurses Association, MNA, a union of 20,000, consisting mostly of registered nurses, is the first major union endorsement for Ginger Jensen's campaign. Now, Jensen is spelled J-E-N-T-Z-E-N. And this is, again, from Socialist Alternative's website, socialistalternative.org. Ginger Jensen's campaign for Minneapolis City Council. Last year, the MNA went out on a historic six-week strike of almost 5,000 registered nurses across the Twin Cities. Now, this endorsement of Ginger Jensen's campaign, who, again, a member of Social Alternative, is based on years of common work. MNA endorsed the attempt to put $15 minimum wage on the ballot in Minneapolis this year, a campaign that Jensen helped lead as director of the Local 15 Now chapter. Jensen is a longtime member of Social Alternative and formerly an organizer with Occupy Homes Minneapolis, which helped fight evictions in the Twin Cities. I'm sorry, Occupy Homes Minnesota, I think. Which helped fight evictions in the Twin Cities during the massive foreclosure crisis caused by the 2008-2009 crash, Great Recession. In 2013, Socialist Alternative member Ty Moore only narrowly missed out on winning a city council seat by around 200 votes. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. This year, Ginger's campaign is broadly viewed as a viable campaign with a real chance of winning.
That was the year we ran Seamus? Was for
yes.
City
yep. Seamus Whelan, Boston City Council. This history of Ty running in Minneapolis, plus Ginger now running, plus the 15 Now struggle, combined with the successes of Shama Sawant in Seattle, show that it is possible to get socialists elected to office on the basis of movements, a step toward a new party. The repeated failure of the Democrats to fulfill promises made to unions shows the need for unions to be willing to support independent candidates outside the two-party system. The Mass Minnesota Nurses Association has shown the way forward by not only endorsing a socialist candidate, but by doing so early before the Democratic Party primary. The labor movement needs to learn from the role of Minneapolis Democratic Party establishment, which fought tooth and nail to prevent $15 from appearing on the ballot. We just talked about that earlier. It is the big business nature of that leadership that causes the repeated failure of Democrats to fulfill promises made to unions and working people, I would add. Endorsing independent candidates is important, but in order to build a real political power, in order to build real political power for working people in this country, we need to build a party of the 99%. One that doesn't take corporate cash and is beholden to working people, not the bosses. So I thought that was a really good article from Socialist Alternative, from the website socialistalternative.org. Now, here in Boston and Worcester, before May 1st, actually, around April 6th, around that week, we're supposed to have a visitor named Kelly Bellin, who's a leader of Socialist Alternative in the United States. She's an experienced organizer and activist who speaks often on women's rights. She's recently in Brazil to speak about the women's rights movement here in the United States. Kelly is a leader of Socialist Alternative in the United States, and she'll be coming to Boston and Worcester for a brief visit, but to hit up some colleges and give some talks on women's rights and the Trump agenda, or variations of that theme. I don't have the Boston info in front of me, but I have the Worcester info. We're going to have, it's going to be on They left the date off. Oh, this kills me. I helped do proofreading on this, and the date is not there. Wow. That is a killer. That is just a killer. I want to cry about that because I proofread this thing myself. On one side, it's the date is there. It's a two-sider. On the other side, it's not. I wish it was on both sides. Anyway, April 5th, Wednesday, Kelly Bellin, speaker for Socialist Alternative, will be speaking on women's rights and the Trump agenda at Worcester State in the Foster Room at 11:30 a.m. and at Clark University in the Jonas Clark 001 room, big room, I've seen it, 7 p.m. For more information, call 769-232-9307. This is for Worcester Women's Rights and the Trump Agenda. Speaker Kelly Bellin, April 6th, 11:30 a.m. at Worcester State University in the Foster Room, 7 p.m. at Clark University in Jonas Clark 001 room. And for more information, call 769-232-9307 or write to worcestersa@gmail.com. Go to Worcester Socialist Alternative on Facebook. And there you go. Now, one of the things that we're doing with this is tying it into May 1st. So on the same leaflet, it says, coming soon, May Day rally in Worcester, which we've already talked about, Monday, May 1st, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., Worcester City Hall Plaza, out in front of City Hall. And we are having this meeting because, you know, on January 21st, there were approximately 3 million people out in the Women's Rights March. And that still kind of is reverberating out there. People wondering, what did that mean exactly? Some people on the left say, well, it didn't have any politics. It was called by the liberals, blah, blah, blah. I would argue, or we would argue in Socialist Alternative, that it was still very significant. Yes, it was politically weak. They had Democrats up on the platform, yammering away about the Democratic Party. Yep. But having that many people out, like the Boston one was phenomenal. You got to know there's more than that out there. There's more politics than the Democratic Party out there, and there was. It showed the potential. Then on March 8th, International Women's Day, there were protests across the world, actually, strikes in other countries, demonstrations in this country. We had a demonstration in Worcester, not very big compared to what we've done recently, but still significant that it happened, and there were protests in other cities. And now we're coming up to May 1st. We're coming up to the 100th day of the Trump presidency. We're getting out, we're tying this into May 1st and getting out the word about what's necessary to keep the movement going for women's rights. We've put some demands on here. At least 12 weeks of paid paternal leave for all in the U.S. Defend Planned Parenthood in Massachusetts and across the U.S. Create a national free quality public child care service system for a $50 hour minimum wage in Worcester and nationwide. Continue the fight back against Trump's agenda of hate and the billionaire class. Make Worcester, and this would be true, we want this in other cities as well, of course, a true sanctuary city. Keep ICE out, not one deportation. Respect immigrants in our community. Tax the super rich and the big corporations. Free quality health care for all. Now, why do we put some of these things that don't seem directly related to women's rights issues? Because they are directly related. People just don't realize it. You know, who's getting hit by the ICE raids? I see a lot of women.
A lot of women.
Getting
their children.
With their mothers all of a sudden getting sweeped up and deported without due process, etc. who is Trump going after? He's always been misogynist. He's always been sexist, always against women, going after Planned Parenthood. In fact, one of the things Trump said after he lost his bid for Trump Care was he lectured the right wing, the far right of the Republican Party, says, you guys, this is the Freedom Caucus, and so inaptly named. It should be called the Proto-Fascist Caucus or Almost Fascist Caucus. This is the far right of the Republican Party. And they're like, Trump is lecturing them, saying, see, we lost because we could have got it. We could have, if you had played ball and voted with this, we could have gotten rid of Planned Parenthood. And he mentioned something else. So that's what's in their sights, whether it's the right wing or more moderate wing, if you want to call it that, the Republicans. There were 33 Republicans that voted against Trump Care, and that was enough to stop it. I'm not trying to sow any illusions into this whole process. Like we talked about earlier, it's a zero-sum game for working people. Whether you have Trump Care or ACA, they're both losers. We don't want to see ACA taken away unless there's something better in place, but both are steps backwards, obviously. Trump lost. Good news. We want him to keep losing. It's going to take mass protests to keep him losing. We need that mass protest on May 1st and even before that. Also, getting back to this meeting, April 5th, we will be talking about how to keep the protests going. We'll bring up the issue of the water also in Worcester Public Schools and how to have, you know, and other issues that are relevant. Because, you know, issues for women cannot be confined, obviously, to just, you know, which are very important, you know, defend, you know, abortion rights, defend Planned Parenthood, etc. Those are extremely important and worth fighting for. But just as impactful on a woman's life is how much money she's able to make. If you're making less than $50 an hour, how can you provide for yourself or anyone else? Or less than $20 an hour, really. If you're about to be swept up by ice and you're afraid to go shopping, right? Afraid to leave the house, what kind of life are you going to have? You need health care. You know, we need free health care. And people that without families aren't always aware of this, but the cost of child care in this country has been completely out of control for decades. I mean, it's a huge cost. It's the kind of cost where you're paying like college tuition for childcare. It's the kind of cost where one partner, if say you're married, and you might not be, this could be single parents having to face this, one partner will quit their job because they're making less money than what they would pay in childcare. This happens frequently. Some people survive because they have the extended family. They drop the kid off at grandma or an aunt's house or whatever, which is fine. Except that, I don't know, grandma and aunt shouldn't have to, you know, be 24/7 childcare providers.
Grandma
either.
Grandma gets sick one day and not can, you know,
right.
pick up little child once, you know, once a, well, what do they call it, a piggyback ride, and you just broke her back.
That was my childcare, was my grandmother, basically. And she was wonderful, and I enjoyed it, but...
And grandfather.
In retrospect, yeah, my grandfather was dead, but my grandmother,
again,
my uncle.
But then again, this is in El Salvador where people actually, it's a community. How can I say a tribal type of community? You know, everybody takes care of each other. I can drop off my son at next door neighbor. You know, I won't have to worry about, you know.
Yep. No, that's true. It's that different. Gets into alienation, and that's one reason we don't.
It's
even
less
have.
Alienated.
Yeah.
Because everybody, you know, you have to. You know, it's kind of like everybody. You know, everybody knows what's happening.
No, I'll give you a quick example. Of the negative side of alienation. There is only one side negative. There's only negative, but I'm just saying different from what you're talking about where people cooperate. I'm listening to a radio show because I have a commute. I listen to radio. Hope you all listen to radio too, all you listeners out there. Listening to national propaganda radio. I'm listening to this horrible, horrible talk show by liberals, Browdy and Egan. They are so horrible. But I tune in every once in a while. So they're talking about, this is before the vote that didn't happen, sorry, talking about Obamacare and Trump Care, if you want to put it that way. And they're taking callers. And some guy calls in. He's got a, you know, local accent. I guess he's from the area. I forget where he's from. And he's like, he literally said, you're not going to believe this, but he literally said,
oh, I believe it.
I don't care.
I believe anything that happens.
I don't care about other people's health care. Because my family's got health care.
Oh, he would say
bada boom, bada bing.
Yeah.
Right? That's
it.
Tell me about that. There you go. Well, the guy might be rich, and that wouldn't surprise me at all. rich people think that way every day. They have to justify in their heads why they're rich and why everyone else shouldn't have a decent life. That's part of being rich. And that's the little cross they have to bear, you know,
get like a kingly attitude, like it's all about me. As long as I'm right. taking,
they have to justify
about my peasants and yep. the subjects.
Yeah, they have to justify their ill-gotten gains. But let's say this guy was a working person, which might have been the case. I'm not sure. To say that, what does that mean when you say that? I don't care about anyone else's health care. Because my family's got my
social path.
Well, it means you don't understand how politics works, buddy. If you think your healthcare is going to stick around if everyone else is losing theirs, do you think the corporations are going to say, wow, that corporation makes more profit by not providing healthcare, so I'm going to keep providing healthcare? No. Harvard University, one of the richest corporations in the world, is trying to get people like me that work there pay more for my healthcare and succeeding, unfortunately, because the union's not fighting hard enough on it, my union. So that's Harvard's calculation is we've got billions in the bank.
So your union and dining service union are different?
Unfortunately, yes. I wish I was in the dining service union.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Because they won.
They don't even work together.
And that means, but yeah. you're not covered because you're not a dining service.
Right. No, I have a health plan that I pay for.
They're attacking on you.
But it keeps going up in cost. Mm-hmm. And it's horrible that it keeps going up in cost. It's taken my... The gulf between my gross pay and my net pay gets wider and wider all the time. So I've stuck out this job because I've been unemployed. I'm scared of being unemployed. I have a family. I stuck out this job, and any raise I get gets eaten up immediately by the healthcare costs that increase at the same time you get a raise. It's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous because Harvard could afford free healthcare for everybody that works there. And speaking of alienation, this guy gets on the radio and says, I don't care about anyone's health care. Now let's think about that we already talked about it from just like a political perspective. You're going to lose your health care with that attitude, buddy. But also, you're just pissing on your fellow workers. Now, most people in America would be like, what do you mean fellow workers? There's no class consciousness in America, or hardly any, because we don't have a big workers' party. Nothing gets defined hardly, except your income, maybe, by the fact that you're a worker. But people still kind of realize, oh, that person works for a living, that person doesn't. It's still there a little bit, but it's not articulated. It's not talked about. We're all one glob of American nationalism. And
that's like the colorblind
whatever.
Society. It's
yeah, right.
We're
right,
colorblind. Yep. We got a black president. No, yep. No.
But
totally.
There's something that cuts across race, the race constructs, the ethnic constructs, and all that, the nationalism, and that is class. You're all working class. Most people are working class. Few people are upper middle class, and then even fewer people are
capitalist
class. Even
your bosses
class.
are working class.
A lot of them, yeah. I mean,
they're the first ones to go. Like in Shaw's, I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, a guy making $20 an hour. My supervisor gone. This yep. guy gone.
Yep. No, and there's a lot of petty supervisors that strut around and try and think that they're not a worker when they're completely a worker, and the title just doesn't mean anything. Really, except for you can give orders and fire somebody, maybe. But anyway, the point is that for someone in America, there are people that think that can actually say to themselves and say publicly, I don't care about anybody else. Now, in a decent society, those people would be ostracized. Those people would say, that's a sociopathic thought you just had there.
Oh, you couldn't get away
with
that. You're
freaking dangerous.
not village, but the town that I'm from, El Salvador.
Good.
San Alejo.
Good.
That attitude.
That you know what?
Get out of
that
here.
That is also
go
hate.
Back to the capital. Yeah.
That is
that's
also,
where it exists. Go back to San Salvador, the right. capital, with all those bloody those people that don't live collectively. But then again, we're an agrarian
I understand
society.
What you mean.
So
that's not
everybody.
Socialism. Yeah.
Everybody works in the way that hey, I got extra eggs. Let's give it to our neighbors or vice versa. You know,
right. But also, it's like. There's such a low level of class consciousness because there's no workers' party to say, oh, this political party is for working people. What does that mean? Oh, it's started by working people. It doesn't get any money from big business. Well, am I a working person? Should I vote for this? Is this in my interest? It creates all these questions and all these resources too in terms of media and things, even self-help like you're talking about that doesn't exist now because you have corporate political parties. You got no political party that's going to tell you You're a worker. Here are your interests, different, separate from big business interests. Even Sanders, who was declared a socialist, even though he wasn't, he didn't say that your interests are completely different from the capitalists. He'd say, well, there's this billionaire class. That's a little misleading. I mean, the term is okay. It's kind of true. But it's not that they're billionaires. It's that they control the means of production, that they control the land and the factories and the workplaces, and they exploit your labor to get richer. So you have a direct opposite interest than they do to not have your labor exploited, or in the meantime, to have it exploited at conditions and benefits that you can survive and flourish on for until the whole thing crashes, you know, which, I mean, I'm saying capitalism crashes the system necessarily, but it goes down into periodic depressions, recessions, and so on. And the fight gets more intense over resources between the rich that want to keep their, keep controlling everything and running everything, and the people that are like, well, this doesn't work. We need something better, you know? I got this thing in front of me again of Momentum Builds for May Day Strikes, but this was from, not from Socialist Alternative. I think it came from Labor Notes, which you should check out for more information about May 1st and other things. Jonathan Rosenblum wrote this, and he's talking about just in general the need for this for May 1st action, and talking about the unions that have done it, which we already mentioned. Yeah, Labor Notes article on May 1st. We're running out of time here real quickly. Let's talk about a few things sort of headline-y-ish in our remaining time. Remember we were talking about, I started to talk about the privatization of the MBTA.
Yep.
Here's the thing I wrote on Facebook.
With Baker Faker.
Baker Faker. That's a good one. This is what I wrote on Facebook.
Well, we met him. I told you, 2014. I know, yep. You, me, and Seamus.
Yeah, we met the
And
the
I think Seamus asked him, do you think the minimum wage? Because we had that referendum, the $15 yep, thing, and yep. Our sign and everything. And he's like, oh, it's fine the way it is. This is fine. I knew it. I was like, what an
it's fine for you,
he
buddy.
He just kept on going. Well, he had to kind of like have a smile on his face because the cameras were rolling. So he's really, I can't have this, you know.
I think it's fine. But like you said, last time this came up, the interesting thing was these guys, I think they were like obviously working class, maybe union guys.
Yeah, there was one
say,
guy.
You guys, oh, we agree with you, but we're still going to vote for him or whatever. Yeah. And he was nice, and he wasn't being aggressive or anything. And
he was a carpenter.
Yeah, and I was like, I tried to say as politely as I could, if you're voting for him, you're not with us. I'm sorry on this issue, man. You can't vote for your bosses and then oppose them. Doesn't work. I mean, it happens, but it doesn't help the situation.
Yeah, your interest and his are two different opposites.
Oh, God, yeah. You want to say, hey, you're being fooled and brainwashed by a false populist. These exist. Again, Trump is not the first right-wing populist. Baker is a right-wing populist. There have been many right-wing populists. There's also so-called left-wing or liberal populists out there. I'm not saying liberal is left-wing. I'm just saying there are also liberal populists out there. Now, I wrote this on Facebook. Got a decent number of interest. not enough, but a decent number. Has anyone else noticed how National Public Radio in the Boston area has become a mouthpiece for the right-wing Pioneer Institute? Have you ever heard of the Pioneer Institute?
No.
They're one of those right-wing think tanks, but they get so much so much help and publicity and quotation time and citation time or citations from National Public Radio in this area. It exists in Massachusetts. It's the one that it started out, I think it became known through its use by the anti-tax forces, the right-wing anti-tax forces in Massachusetts back in the 80s. And now it's like every other day I'm hearing it cited on National Public Radio. And their pet project right now seems to be privatizing the MBTA and also charter schools. They love charter schools, of course, privatizing education. And NPR will cite them without any counterpoint. Without, you know, saying that this is a, by the way, extremely pro-capitalist, run by the capitalist so-called think tank. No, they'll just say the Pioneer Institute. Oh, that sounds like Pioneers. That sounds pretty nice.
I think I heard about the Pioneer Institute.
Oh, man. We gotta go pick at that place. Not much less just like talk about it. We gotta go seriously disrupt operations there, you know, to say, look, everything you're being used to hit us over the head, you're like a gun. You know, you're a metaphoric gun against the working class. They're shooting bullets at us. How many people lost their jobs because people hear Pioneer Institute. That sounds pretty, that sounds okay. They must know what they're talking about. They don't. They don't. It's just blatant propaganda for the corporate class, for capitalists. So anyway, NPR, this is again quoting myself here, excuse me. NPR cites this corporate propaganda machine as a credible source with almost mostly without any opposing view. The report I heard the other night, I'm not quoting now, I'm just saying, report I heard the other night, no opposing view. The other day, it was bright and early Friday morning. Not in a great mood on Fridays, right? You know, dragging my butt into work. I work an 11-hour day on Fridays. And here is bada boom.
I can tell you got a lot of road rage.
I had road rage, man. I'm pounding the steering wheel on this one. They bring out the Pioneer Institute and only the Pioneer Institute to justify privatizing the bus mechanics on the MBTA.
We have accidents because of failure of engines.
Yeah, they'll bring in some corporation and they'll say like Keolis on the commuter rail and say, gee, that's not working well.
We'll take the buses to China.
We'll have it fixed in China and brought back.
Deal with airplanes.
And then we'll say we're green, you know. Mm-hmm. One line of attack every time Baker and the Democrats in Massachusetts want to further cut jobs and privatize the public transit system, called the T here, NPR will introduce the pro-privatization piece with, quote, a study, unquote, from the Pioneer Institute. This morning, bright and early, NPR launches an attack, I wrote this on Friday, on the bus maintenance workers at the T, the latest in a series of corporate media and political attacks against union workers at the T, at the MBTA. NPR starts this attack, quoting, without examination or counterpoint, a, quote, study by the Pioneer Institute. Again, against bus maintenance workers. This would be like Goldman Sachs printing a study about the need to evict people from their homes in the name of profit enhancement for Goldman Sachs. They were one of the big financial companies behind the evictions in 2007, 2008, and beyond. And the bankers' cabal involved in that. And people think NPR is somehow progressive or balanced. NPR takes money from the Koch brothers. NPR has commercials up the wazoo now. I didn't say up the wazoo. I just said NPR now has commercials. And NPR always, always promotes a pro-corporate, pro-capitalist, pro-imperialist agenda. And in fact, if you don't believe me, Diego, I know you believe me, but let's say you didn't believe me. Listen to NPR about Venezuela anytime. They are far to the right. It's like listening to, you know, right wing propaganda, like from a real like
Rush
like
Bimbo,
almost a fat. Yeah, exactly. And they're like that in certain circumstances. Headline: in Ireland, we have members of the Socialist Party of Ireland who are under attack and with allies for protesting against water charges, which they won the campaign. But now the state of Ireland in Europe is coming down against them. It's called the Jobstown protests. Check out socialistalternative.org, an article by Jess Spear, S-P-E-A-R, under World Events in Ireland to defend the right to protest solidarity with Jobstown. Now, why would this be important here? Because an injury to one is an injury to all extends internationally, but also because here there are all sorts of states trying to pass laws against the right to protest, and they're being charged with kidnapping, among other offenses, so-called offenses, because they held up the car, the protest held up the car of a Labour Party official in Ireland. Can you believe that? How many protests have you been on that holds up traffic? Every single one.
Are you going to run over the protesters?
Yeah. Nissan workers are organizing in the Deep South. This is from socialalternative.org. Jacob Florence. Don't have time to go into it, but this is in Mississippi, I believe. Nissan factory in Canton, Mississippi. So check out Nissan workers organizing a union in Canton, Mississippi. It's getting some publicity because some well-known people like Danny Glover are supporting it. But also it's because, over 80% of the workers there are African-American and being paid very poorly. It's being tied into civil rights down in the South, et cetera. And also because of that vote in South Carolina that just lost for a union that was extremely important at Boeing, this one might win. We'll see. I don't have the information on when the election's coming up. And then I wrote an article about what they've done in Iowa. I encourage people to read it, not because I wrote it, but because it's like this is how far Trump is going to go nationally and how far some states are going, like Wisconsin has already done this in Iowa. Right to work isn't enough. Iowa's already a right to work state. They doubled down. They're going after the unions there just to bust them, just to get rid of them. So we're out of time. Thanks for listening. And we will be back in 2 weeks, May 1st. protest, strike.
Keep your head up. Power to the people.
And thanks again for listening. Social Alternative Radio, we're out.